Welcome to the Collecting Inside podcast. I'm Lori.
And I'm Sarah.
And we're here to share our exploration into being human.
Inspired by coffee meetups, we dive into topics that confound, mystify, and inspire us, leading to a space where we can better understand and enjoy this precious life.
Our perspectives are definitely distinct, but it's the intersection between them that our most amazing conversations and insights erupt.
We are so excited you're here. Let's get started. Hello, Lori.
Hi, Sarah.
How are you?
I am good. We're good.
Good. For the first time, we're not wearing the same color.
I know, which is strange.
I know, but it actually
It's not a sign of anything.
No, it's not. We're good. So I'm going to start us off in a strange way with John Batiste.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my family has been listening to me talk about John Batiste for the last month.
Well, I used John Batiste in my yoga today, the first song, and I asked everybody, I said, have you heard of John Batiste? And everyone said, yes, he's amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that was what my friends initially, I mean, I'd heard of him, but on January 19th, because I looked at the date, I watched his documentary, American Symphony, which is on Netflix. And I was in the first 10 minutes and I paused it at least five times because I just felt something that was indescribable. And what I wanted to sort of do is talk through what that was initially and what I now believe it is, because mm-hmm. I think it'll lead to a really interesting conversation.
Hey, let's do it.
So initially, you know, John is just an amazing talent in every way. He is a musical composer, I would say a musical genius, prodigy. And when he talks about receiving a lot of his music in the liminal space, he calls it, between sleep and wake. And he believes that he's tapping into a universal consciousness, that he's sort of hearing the music, not creating it. And so initially I was like, oh, it's that. It is the fact that he and I have similarities in how we creatively express, because I similarly feel like I'm not writing in the middle of the night. I'm sort of hearing it while I'm sleeping and then waking up and writing. So I thought it was that simple. And then as I immersed myself by playing the World Music Radio album over and over repeatedly, because I just, it has this vibration or energy or frequency that I really felt and almost wanted to just immerse myself in. And what I've come to, and maybe I'll get to somewhere else, but is that he is living in his unvarnished truth.
Yes, he is.
He is, you know, he talked about going to Juilliard and playing this kind of odd kid instrument. And that at first they were like, why is he playing that? They couldn't understand it. And now it's painted on the wall of Juilliard with him next to it.
It's amazing.
But he was so steadfast in what he heard and felt and knew, you know, dancing through the streets of New York City, playing music with a whole entourage behind him, like in total New Orleans style. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And I did watch a documentary as well after you spoke to me about it. And I actually paused it because I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is Sarah in the masculine, honestly. And I paused and I actually wrote down verbatim something that he said in the beginning of the documentary. And this is what he said. He said, what we love about music is not that it sounds good. What we love about music is that it sounds inevitable. It's playing the thing that we all know is unfolding, whether we want to accept it or not. And it's there always. We just need to harness it and be open to it. I mean, that's really you with your poetry and your words and how I feel when I read your words most of the time. So when I read that, I said, oh, no wonder why he touched you so, because there's such a symmetry there, even though you don't know each other.
No, I mean, that is so humbling. I was told recently I need to learn to receive. So I thank you so much for that. That means more than you could know. And it, you know, I knew it resonated. And my beautiful acupuncturist was like, you know, it's a vibration that you must want to hold, or that you identify as your next step. Or, but it just, that unbridled authenticity, the feeling that you can truly be who you are, which is the title of one of his songs, you know, it made me really think about the way in which we grow up. And that when I was young, and I think a lot of us feel like this, you are trying to fit in. So it's sort of like all I wanted was to conform to what I thought was acceptable or cool. And I wanted to wear the right, you know, thing and have my hairstyle the right way. And
that's so normal.
Right. It totally is.
Everyone feels like that when they're young, I think, in a certain regard.
Totally, because you want to belong.
Yeah.
You know? And what's interesting now, not that I don't care about belonging, because of course I do. We all want to belong. But I sort of prize difference. Like, I prize authenticity. I really appreciate it in someone else.
Yeah. I feel as I get older, I don't have any capacity for inauthenticity, for the trying to fit in, for not talking about what's really on our mind. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm having a conversation with a friend, I just really want to just be just unadulterated, honest.
Yeah.
Because what's anything else worth at this point? I don't know. It's just, maybe that is part of aging and growing and evolving. Mm-hmm. And maybe not everyone at our age feels that, but I think a lot of people probably do. Like, we don't have the time or the space for the false things in life, you know?
Totally not. And as I thought more, I think that what was authentically me 10 years ago would actually not be authentically me today. And that might sound strange.
Really?
Yes. Because I feel like you're always in this moment, or you're just evolving through self-discovery all the time. And so the person that I was 10 years ago that I was authentically expressing was who I was. Today, that person looks really different.
Well, you're busting through a life belief of mine. This is interesting. It's going to be an interesting conversation, I think, because I guess most of my life, I've always believed people are who they are.
Yeah.
Like, people are not going to change. You know, the bully at 12 years old is going to be the bully at 40 years old. What do you think about that? Is that not true? Because I would like it not to be true.
I don't. I think that my thought is, I think I agree with you in that I think that we all have an inherent self. I think oftentimes that most authentic self is the self that we are when we're a child and sort of unencumbered by life experience and expectations and the things that come with life.
That's a nice thought.
I do.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thought.
And that I think that, you know, over time and through those experiences, I'm not sure we change, we harden in certain ways that I think then catalyze behaviors. And so when I say that, so can someone change? I feel like those hardened behaviors can be changed. Maybe the authentic self, no. But those things that we become to protect ourselves.
Oh, that's a, see, you're such a better person
no,
than
I'm
I am.
No, I'm not.
But it's true, because when people do act out like that and do things that are not kind, mm-hmm. it's usually because they've had that treatment to themselves,
yeah,
right?
Right. And, you know, when I say that 10 years ago, my authenticity would have been different, it would have been equally as authentic. But I think the space that I inhabit today is different than the space that I inhabited then. And so the more that we delayer all of the things that have thickened us or hardened us over the years, mm-hmm. the more we wipe that away, the closer we become, I think, to our inherent self. And that's what I see in Jean Baptiste.
Yes.
And I, you know, because there are moments like when I was a child, I was dancing, not well, singing also not well. I always had a microphone. I was, you know, announcing, I was pretending that I was doing, I just was like joyous. And my mom would tell you that. But that wasn't how I lived most of my life. But now I'm like, okay, if I want to, my family would tell you, I will just start dancing in the middle of the living room because it's an expression of joy. But I can't do that. Can, I guess, is the wrong word. I'm not as apt to do that in the middle of the sidewalk.
Yeah, in the middle of Times Square.
But I want to be. And that's what I see. I want to be. I want to be that.
Unencumbered.
Yeah, yeah. You know, do you, when you look at yourself, like, do you think your authentic expression, and I think this is true of some people, your authentic expression today looks the same as your authentic expression 10 years ago?
I do think so. I think, yeah, when I was young, I think authentically, I've always been the same person. I don't care as much today as I did 10 years ago what other people think. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be doing this. Right? And I think I've just had some life experiences, and I've, through very close people in my life, I've watched and witnessed them deal with very difficult life transitions and fights. And it's really inspired me to think, we're not on this planet all that long. So just be who you are. So in that way, I think I've grown and evolved. I don't worry so much if, you know, what someone thinks of me.
Yeah.
So I guess in that way, mm-hmm. I've changed. But I think as far as the way I view humanity and people around me is in the way I treat other people.
Yeah.
I hope will always be the same. Yeah. But I, you know, like going back to what I said about the bully.
Yeah.
You know, I was lucky. You know, I was lucky. It was really, I grew up loved in a really solid, amazing family. And not everybody has that for a lot of different reasons. And even people that do have that for things that happen in their lives, it's, you know, you can become hardened and then react.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Right. No.
So backtracking there a little bit.
No, but I understand. I mean, I think that that's a common... You know, it's sort of like seeing underneath. It's trying to see underneath someone who isn't showing you underneath, you know, so that's not easy.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
But, and I've had to do that with a lot of people that I love in my life.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yep.
It's difficult.
Yes.
But just getting to the core of who they are.
Right.
And why that's whatever is.
Of course.
They're reacting. Yeah.
Well, and I'll always remember you saying that you always saw who I was. So that underneath, I think, I hope, shines through and glimmers with all of us. It's just sort of being able to witness it. And I guess my authentic expression is different today because, like, I'm writing. Like, I never wrote before. So it's like...
And receiving.
Yeah. And yes. But
that's pretty altering, life-altering.
It is. It's been a life-altering few years for sure. I probably wouldn't be doing this either. Yeah. But yeah, here we are.
Here we are.
I also, just to take it into a totally different space. So I was thinking a lot about, you know, what we see at face value of each other, which is often the thinking mind. And that the thinking mind, to me, is essentially what we extrapolate from all of the information we've taken in, from everything we've consumed. Whether that's books, life experiences, you know, everything we've taken in our lives, our thinking mind then sort of pulls it apart and both regurgitates it and sort of creates its own set of information from it. But what the last few years has shown me is that there's this other space. And as John Batiste would call it, universal consciousness, he calls it a vibration. Where there's additional information for all of us, that's where I believe that I receive the poetry. That's where I feel energy in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And as we think about artificial intelligence, to me, it's a broad and powerful replica of the thinking mind. So we fear it.
Ooh, yes.
Because it has the ability to do most of what our thinking mind can do.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you to lose your train of thought, But ChatGPT mm-hmm. has passed the medical boards.
Yep.
And gotten above median score on the MCATs, passed the bar. And it makes me wonder, what does that mean for future medicine and people that practice medicine? Maybe they will be able to tap into their intuitive mm-hmm. sides mm-hmm. more than if that side's taken care of, you know, with ChatGPT, and they can get that information at their fingertips at any moment, maybe they can focus more on the human connection with their patients.
I totally believe we need to sort of harness it so that it mm-hmm. doesn't, you know, so it works for us. But I totally believe that if we see it, if we start to prize, value, celebrate the other aspects of ourselves that to me, for the most part, lay hidden.
Dormant
within society. Like when we, you know, productivity is essentially the thinking brain. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, what does it look like to shift to celebrating, producing, valuing in all the different ways, your intuitive mind, creative mind, because I think that creative space is often this other space, your sort of feeling and human connection. Mm-hmm. And I think that AI actually is giving us an opportunity to shift to this new space.
That's a beautiful thought.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thought, and it's very uplifting because I think we're all afraid of that, mm-hmm. of AI.
Right. And right? I get why. You know, I do. I get why. Because in terms of the thinking brain, yeah, it is potentially replacing it. I mean, we'll still have it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it pulling it back to authenticity for me, we need to start operating from that space, communicating from that space, being that person, because that's actually the person that evolutionarily, which I don't know is a word, is going to be the person who survives beyond AI.
Almost like when we were talking about fight or flight.
Yeah.
Way back in the caveman mm-hmm. days, cave person days.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's, yeah. You know, the people that survived were the people that had that adrenaline and that anxiety. And yeah. now here we have evolved and people are stuck with the anxiety.
Right.
But that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's actually a really uplifting yeah. way to think about AI.
Yeah.
Maybe to bring people's fears down a little bit.
Right. You know, I think what it requires is, it does. It requires, I think it starts on the granular level. It requires us to individually begin to operate from a new space, to begin sort of providing opportunities for that intuitive, energetic, feeling connection. The more we do that and the more we operate from that space, the better off I think we're going to be societally.
This is just coming to me right now. I have not had this thought ever before until this moment, but I'm wondering if in the past, you know, people used to be very religious. We had religious communities. They supported our families and mm-hmm. in our larger communities. And I feel like our society's falling away from that a bit.
Yeah.
And religion has caused a lot of war. That's a whole nother yes. topic, yeah. wars and,
yeah.
and things like that. But I wonder if people were trying in the past with their faith to tap into that creativity in a sense,
yeah.
the prayer and the hope,
yes.
right? And now maybe what we're talking about is just tapping into that in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah. I'm going to mess up the first stage of this, but Albert Einstein believed that there were three stages of religion. I'm forgetting what the first stage is right now. Hopefully it will come to
okay.
me. The second stage was around morality. So I think that's the stage that we're actually leaving. The last stage was an understanding of the cosmos.
You're kidding.
Nope. And, you know, that's so resonant. That's exactly what you are saying, is that we're sort of moving into this new space of faith or belief or, you know, exploring ourselves in the greater world in this way. And I'm like, if we began to prize those things in each other, if I started to prize your authenticity and prized your difference and prized that you view the world differently because your thoughts are solely an amalgamation of everything you've taken in, then maybe I would approach you with more understanding, more compassion, more kindness. Like if we saw each other's authentic selves or thinking selves as a product of something and appreciated it as opposed to just wanting to chastise who you are because you think differently than me because we have totally different life experiences.
Right. And it is our life. It's kind of like I was judgmental earlier.
You were, and we love you.
Yeah.
But we all are.
Yeah.
We all are. I'm judgmental. We all are.
Yeah.
I mean, because once that starts coming down, once we start to open ourselves, I've got to believe that that's where we go next because we cannot continue where we are.
No.
Like we really can't. I mean, as a species, I feel like we can't. So I'm hopeful that in this new wave, whatever it is, that we will have the ability to come together and appreciate each other and see past those differences that are a product of life and see the heart of each other.
It's a beautiful thought. It's difficult to do.
I know.
It's difficult. Like, how do you do that when someone's being unkind? I'm asking. I'm trying to grow here.
No. Well, and I certainly do not have all the answers, but I will say that the more I dive into myself, the more I like uncover the parts of myself and the more authentic I am, the more I understand who you are. And I don't know exactly why that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no longer defined by your unkindness. Like sometimes the unkindness that we see, we take it. Like we take it on as our own and we get angry and because it says more to me. Our response to that unkindness says more about yourself than it does the other person.
Oof.
And it's not bad. It's just an indicator to me of where you need to dig a little bit deeper. Mm. When something triggers you, it's like, okay, hold on. Why is it triggering me? And it's something to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what life is. So essentially, those moments are opportunities for us to dig deeper, even into our authenticity. I love Elise Lunin. I don't know if you know who she is, but she wrote the book On Our Best Behavior, and she has a podcast called Pulling the Thread.
Mm-hmm.
And in her book, she talked about envy as being one of those like emotions that people have that trigger, you feel like envious of someone. And she believes, and she might have gotten this from someone else, that when you feel envious, it's something to look at because that person has something that you desire, that you're not letting yourself acknowledge that you desire. You know, it's sort of all of those emotions that we feel, anger, you know, envy, judgment, righteousness. It's sort of an opportunity to me to dig into why.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all are different.
We are.
We're unique. We're different. And I'd love a space where we begin to understand each other.
That would be beautiful.
It would. And John Batiste, thank you. But really, like, we're all on this journey of finding ourselves, really, I think is why we're here. And, you know, I'm so grateful to him because this last month of being immersed in this energy for whatever reason has taken me to this new space. So next week you might see me dancing down Main Street.
Uh-huh.
And if you do, now you know why.
I think you need to write him a letter or something, an email.
I know. I know. But it is. And I would say, you know, and I know we're wrapping up here, but I would say that when you come across those people who spark something in you, like who you just feel magnetized to for some reason, I think there's a greater purpose behind your connection.
And pay attention to it.
Pay attention to it. Yep. Engage in it. Be brave. Reach out, write a letter. but really, like, it's teaching you something. It's a new space for you to explore. So I would encourage everyone.
Like this one with you.
Yes. And vice versa. But thanks as always for allowing, thanks for, you know, exploring John Batiste after I talked about him. I know that it's been a lot for my friends.
It was amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Just, and also, you know, I'm not musical at all. So it was lovely to watch that lifestyle, just such a different world, right?
Yeah. I know. And it inspires all of us.
It does.
Like we all feel it. You feel it when you're teaching your classes. Like we all feel it.
Music.
You know?
I love. Yeah, right. Yeah. I meant playing and being a musician, which I'm not, but listening and using music in life is.
Yeah.
Makes life so much more colorful, doesn't it?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
As
thanks,
always,
Sarah.
I love our conversations.
Yeah.
And thanks to everyone for joining us. And please share, subscribe, and keep being your authentic selves.
Yep. Have a great day.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.